In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be talking about stair-stepping into a different audience. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 283. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it, I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. How are you doing this week, Rob?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I got an interesting little hack that I heard about on a podcast where you can basically, if you're sending your new trial signups into Slack, like we send it into a signups channel so we can see who's signing up. If you're already doing that, you can wire Zapier up to essentially monitor that channel and pull a domain name or an email address out of the Slack chat and then push it into full contact, and it gets the information. So you can actually, you know, figure out, hey, does this person or company have a lot of Twitter followers? Do they have big social media presence? What's their LinkedIn bio and their Twitter bio, just to get more information about them? So it was surprisingly difficult to set up. It seems like it should be pretty easy because Zapier tends to be pretty easy to use, but there was a bunch of finagling that I had to do to get it set up. And then in the end, it seems to work for like less than half of the trials that come through actually retrieve any information from full contact. So it's an interesting hack if you have an hour to set it up and you're interested and finding out more about folks who are signing up and can do a lot of follow-up. But to be honest, in the end, I'm a little disappointed with the amount of effort I had to put into it and the results that I'm getting.
Yes, I've looked into those services before, and it seems like that, in a way, I'll kind of draw an analogy with something like Reportive, where Reportive seems to gather some of the information from LinkedIn as well. And I don't know how well Full Contact is able to do that, because I think that there's probably a huge discrepancy between people who are using their work email addresses for their social presence on Twitter or Facebook or wherever versus people who are using their personal email addresses inside of LinkedIn. And you're able to kind of match that up. And a lot of times people, they'll add in their work email address, for example, into LinkedIn, because then it makes it very easy for other people who they know or work with to find them. So LinkedIn, and obviously I think Reportive is owned by LinkedIn now, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right. Yep.
Yeah. So they probably have all the tools and stuff they need to be able to get that information versus something like Full Contact, which is probably a little outside the box.
Right.
But that's cool. I mean, I think these types of services where they're able to gather additional metadata about people based on their email addresses is nice to have when it works. But obviously, when it falls down, it's a little disappointing.
For sure. What's going on with you? You have a deadline coming up in the next couple of days.
Oh, yes. Hard at work trying to get all the code out the door. There's a few, I'll say, minor sticking points that we're still trying to work around, but I'm pretty sure that we'll be able to finish this off in the next couple of days and hopefully get it in the hands of our first beta customer that is outside of the four walls of my office. Nice. And hopefully see what happens.
There are always a few minor sticking points 2 days before launch, so no one be surprised by that.
You get 90% of the work done so you can work on the other 90%.
Exactly. Well, good for you.
We have an interesting question that came in from Armin Messick, and actually a little bit on this topic. He says, "Hi guys, really like your show. You're providing so much value, and after listening to an episode, my motivation is always going up. I got a question for you. I'm launching my first product, and right now I'm sending cold emails to people. Do you have a suggestion of how I can track open rates on individuals? I didn't find an easy way to do it. Thanks for any help in advance." I've done this before. There's a couple of different tools that you can use. One of the things that I've used before is Sidekick, and there's a Chrome plugin for that, and they, I believe, have a free plan, which allows you to just see who is opening emails and who isn't. But actually, your question kind of leads a little bit more towards what I'm actually working on now with Bluetick, which is not only tracking how many people are opening those emails, but whether or not you're getting replies to them, and then managing that follow-up process beyond it. Hopefully that helps to answer your question. I would probably start with Sidekick, see if it does what you want it to do. There's other options out there that kind of operate in this space, though, and there's probably, I don't know, a dozen of them. So, but hopefully that at least gets you on the right track.
Yeah, the other two that I've seen are Tout, which is at toutapp.com, and Yesware. And depending on, I think Tout is web-based, and like it's a full web interface, and then Yesware integrates with your Gmail account. Those are other ways that you can track opens on cold emails. So one other thing I wanted to toss in, last week I mentioned listening to Masters of Doom. I found out this week that there's not a sequel to it, but there is a book called Prepare to Meet Thy Doom. And it's basically a collection of magazine articles that I think most were published in like Wired and maybe some gaming magazines. And it's actually a collection of different stories about gaming. So there's like a 10 or 15 minute version. I'm listening to this, obviously. I'm sure you could buy it and it's 10, 15 pages. But the audio version is, there's one of like the story of Flappy Bird, and there's one is the story of Atari. There's a really good story of Gary Gygax, the inventor of Dungeons and Dragons. And then there is an update around 2004, 2005 with the guys from id Software. So I just discovered this. It was published maybe 6 months ago. So if you have listened to Masters of Doom or read it and you're interested in more like that, the same author has published a book called Prepare to Meet Thy Doom. And then on another front, I'm listening to the Snowball audiobook again. It's called The Snowball, and it's the story of Warren Buffett. And it is a very thick book. It's a biography, but it was as told by Warren Buffett to a writer. He said he's never going to write his autobiography, so he wanted someone else to do it. And I find this book fascinating in terms of someone who had this unique talent, this unique advantage, and he really, really likes financial reports. And he figured out how to read them better than anyone else. And then he figured out his investing philosophy, and the dude just showed up every day for like 50 years. And he calls it the snowball. He just built the snowball over the course of that time and started, you know, with a tiny little bit of cash and managed his, I think it was like parents and friends when it started, and then just built it up. And fascinating story of kind of being in it for the long haul and then really playing long ball and looking out decades in terms of building wealth instead of being in a big hurry for it.
Yeah, I've caught bits and pieces of his story over the years, and it is kind of fascinating the way he started out with virtually nothing, and then he decided to move away. I think he moved out to Omaha, and then I'm pretty sure he moved from New York, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
and
I think you're right.
It was just, people said, you're crazy for leaving New York, because this is where everything happens, and he was still able to manage the business and do everything from a completely different location, and he hasn't really changed his habits. I mean, he doesn't live in this extravagant house. I mean, he runs business in order to play the game. It's not because he wants money or needs money. It's just he likes it.
Yeah. That's the cool part is the guy. I like when folks who are in it for the long haul and who I guess have this one kind of outlier trait, just double down on that and stick with it for so long. And when that turns out well, it's like a cool story to hear. And one tip, what I heard is, I haven't read the physical book, but there's an unabridged and an abridged audio version. And I've heard that the abridged version is just fine, because even the abridged version, I think, is 20 something hours. I think the unabridged might be like 35 hours. So personally, I've listened to the unabridged. I don't feel like I missed anything. And folks who reviewed both of them said that the abridged was just fine. So what are we talking about today?
Today, what we're going to be talking about is a thread that came up inside of Founder Cafe, which is our private membership community. And it was a question about how to stair-step into a different audience. So essentially going from an existing business that you have that serves a particular niche or a particular audience and trying to leverage that audience or the things that you've learned into a completely different audience. And I think that there's a bunch of different reasons why you might want to do this, but let's kind of do a recap of what the stair-step approach looks like.
Sure. So a stair-step approach is something that I kind of developed over the course of several years, and I eventually published a blog post on it and did a talk on it. And so if you go to, we'll link this up in the show notes, but it's at softwarebyrob.com, or you can search on my name plus stair-step. And it's now been mentioned in a couple of books, and you know, people quote it in article stuff. But the idea is that I've laid out these three steps, and you could call them stages or whatever, but it's steps of maybe your entrepreneurial journey as you're trying to launch a product. And I have a couple different versions of it. The one I'll really stick to today is the one about launching software products. So step one is really thinking about launching a software product with a one-time sale and a single sales channel. So think about like a WordPress plugin or maybe a mobile app, a Magento add-on, even an ebook. I realize that's not software, but that kind of stuff. And you have a single sales channel, which is typically going to be like the WordPress.org plugin repository, or it's maybe SEO, you know, organic traffic, or maybe the Amazon store, the Android app store, or YouTube or something. It's you really optimize and you learn that single channel. And the idea here is to get experience and to get some money under your belt and really just kind of learn the game. Step two is to just repeat step one, because the thought here is that you're doing step one on the side, right? While you have probably a full-time job or you're doing consulting. Step two is to repeat step one multiple times until you own your time. So you have multiple plugins. That's an example. Like you can have multiple plugins, or you can have multiple ebooks, or you can have multiple e-commerce sites or whatever it is. And the reason that you just repeat those is because you're just trying to get more experience and get better at all aspects of it, like the copywriting and the marketing. And once you have multiple, then you you have the diversification that you're going to feel okay about quitting your job, and you also have a lot of experience, right? You have experience on multiple fronts. It's your single channel, it's building a product, it's launching a product, it's copywriting, all this stuff. Once you get to step two, you have a bit of experience, you have a lot of time, you have a bit of money coming in. So then think about moving to step three if it's something that, is interesting to you. And that's basically a recurring sales. So typically in our space, that would be SaaS. And the reason I have these three steps is because you don't just want to jump into SaaS on day one and try to build it, because it's complicated. It's very competitive. It's hard to do on the side. You know, there's a number of reasons. You don't have the experience. And since SaaS is competitive, a lot of people will outmarket you and outbuild you. So step three is to launch that SaaS app and get the golden ticket, which is recurring sales.
So now that we've talked a little bit about the stair-step approach itself, let's talk about why you would want to do this. You know, why would you want to move into a completely different audience, especially when you've already worked so hard to build up one or several small products such that they're making a full-time income for you? And I think the first one is boredom. I mean, some people just get bored with working on the same thing, and they get to a point where the money is not insignificant and they don't want to lose the money, but at the same time, it's not necessarily bringing in the level of revenue that they want it to. So they look around and they say, well, I could probably do something better or bigger in a different market, but where I am right now is probably not going to get me there.
Yeah, and this is really common, because especially if you're starting with a step one idea, they tend to have a natural plateau once that sales channel is tapped out. And if that market space, I mean, let's say you've built something for pet sitters or just a small niche, you know, salons or barbershops or something. Obviously, those niches can be large, but the amount that you can reach on through online marketing means is fairly small in those instances. That's at a point where you should probably start thinking, huh, is there a larger market that I can reach online that I want to switch to for my next step?
Another reason why you might want to switch is that higher lifetime values for your customers might not even be possible in a particular niche. And that comes around a lot from products where there's this one-time sale, or I would almost say in the WordPress business as well, like there are a lot of plugins where you can get the one-time sale and it's not a stretch in order to be able to do that. But getting people to pay on a recurring basis for WordPress plugins right now is, I would say, a little bit difficult. It's really not common for most WordPress plugins to have a subscription model of any kind. I have seen them, I have paid for them myself, but it's not common. And for certain types of customers, they're just simply not willing to spend a lot of money. So what happens is your lifetime value for those customers tends to be low, and it's very difficult to increase it without going down the route of bundling or providing completely different products that possibly overlap.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of reasons why high lifetime values are, you know, aren't going to be possible in certain spaces. I mean, if you think about lifetime value, if you have a subscription business, then the lifetime value gets higher the longer people stick around. And if you have a one-time sale product, then you really need to either increase the upfront price, and there's always a natural limit to that. You know, again, coming back to the example of pet sitters, I mean, they just aren't going to be willing to pay $500 upfront for a piece of software. It's very unlikely. Their price point's going to be more like a consumer or a prosumer. Photographers, I would say, it depends on how, if whether they're like truly a professional running a studio or if they're kind of doing it on the side. That's another niche that a lot of folks go after, and they are pretty price sensitive. And so the lifetime value in these niches can have a cap. Now, if you have enough volume and there are a bazillion of them online, then you can, then the LTV has less of an impact because you can just get so many folks signing up. But that's pretty rare. It's a pretty rare niche that you can come in and find enough people that a low LTV in essence will work for you, because then you have to go after the organic traffic and you can't do much in terms of paid marketing in that instance.
So let's talk about a couple of the really bad reasons for switching. And you and I discussed this offline a little bit, and trying to come up with a absolute, this is a bad reason for switching, was a little bit difficult. I think the best one that we came up with was the idea that the grass is always greener someplace else. So if you're looking around and you're looking at your product, say, well, this is difficult, and I think over there, if I try to develop a product in this market for these particular types of people, it's going to be easier. I think that may probably be the most, or I'll say the worst reason for trying to switch into a different audience. But at the same time, if you double down on the things that you're doing now, in many ways, that is a competitive advantage because it's going to be difficult for other people to get into your market and replicate the things that you're doing. So it kind of cuts both ways, which makes it difficult to come up with a lot of reasons that are just absolute and say, this is a bad reason for switching. But there are a lot of places where there's multiple caveats. So for example, if you think that another company is going to come in and shut you out of a particular market, let's say that your product is reliant on Twitter APIs or reliant on data from Google, there's this idea of a perceived threat from them doing something that is going to shut you out, versus how likely that is to happen. I mean, if all of your revenue is based on that one product, they have the ability to shut you down and it looks like they're headed in that direction, then it could just be out of caution that you say, well, let me go do something else in a completely different market so that I don't have to worry about this problem. But at the same time, you have to weigh that. I mean, it's not an absolute, this is absolutely going to happen. You do have to take those into account and there's mitigating factors there.
Yeah, I think that certain people, and hopefully you know who you are, like certain people have the personality where they like to start a lot of things, and when things get hard, they jump to the next thing. And I think that's, you know, kind of what you're saying with the grass is always greener. Some folks are good finishers, some folks are good starters. And I think that if you have the tendency to jump around, that's probably a bad reason to just bail on something. If you feel like you haven't stuck around, grow something to fruition, and you keep bouncing either from idea to idea or from market to market, that's probably a bad reason. With that said, there are a lot of really good reasons that we've outlined here with higher LTVs, not ability to grow, difficult market to reach. There's some good reasons to be doing that. I mean, I think a good example of this is actually what Brian Castle did when, you know, he had Restaurant Engine, he had Hotel Propeller, and he built and grew those things and he put in the time and he grew them for years. And he hit a point where he realized, you know, I have a lot of skills. I now have an audience in a new space. And, you know, he had the podcast and the blog and such. And he, in essence, moved on to audience ops, and that has grown way, way faster. And there's a number of reasons for that, but he wasn't jumping around. You know, he wasn't bouncing from one idea to the next. He had put in his time. He had learned a bunch. I mean, that was really kind of a step one idea for him. And now he's moved on to where Audience Ops is growing a lot faster, and it's already larger than the other two combined. And I think that's kind of an interesting case study of thinking about stair-stepping your way, not only up, but kind of a horizontal move into a different audience as well.
So let's talk about some of the options for moving into a different audience. And I think there's three basic mechanisms for going into a different audience. And the first one is to move an existing product that you have horizontally into a different market vertical. Essentially, you're using the same technology, but you're marketing it towards a different user base. So there's a couple of different places where you might be able to do this. So if you have a CRM package that is for web designers, you might say, well, let me try and take this and repackage it a little bit and put a spin on the marketing, and I'm going to market it towards software developers or freelancers or something along those lines. It's a slightly different market, or maybe even a radically different market, but the majority of the technology base is going to stay the same. And most of what is going to change is your market positioning, how you do your customer development, gathering the language that they're using, and the new website that you're probably going to use for selling that product.
You know, and there's obviously advantages to doing this. I mean, there's less technical heavy lifting you have to do. You don't need to build something from scratch, faster time to market because your software is already built in essence. I mean, you don't need to make tweaks to it, but you have the bulk of it. The negatives to this are it is a completely new market. You're going to need to start from scratch. You're going to have to do customer development. You're going to have to build a support pipeline and the website from scratch. It could also be potentially confusing for some customers unless you pick a completely new name with a new domain. And in that case, you are leaving behind kind of your SEO, your organic inbound links and your reputation, your brand. You know, you leave a lot of stuff behind. So it depends on if you just take the code base and move it over or if you actually shift everything. Because if people are reading an article that says, hey, this is CRM software for XYZ audience, and then they come there and it's for a different audience, that could be confusing. But all in all, I mean, you know, there's this kind of old marketing saying that says, try to avoid selling a new product to a new market. What you really want to do is you want to sell a new product to an existing audience that you have, or you want to sell an existing product to a new audience. But doing new to new is really bad. And so this is a way to kind of counter that, is to take this existing product and migrate it into a new audience.
And that leads us directly into the second one, which is to buy an existing product. And this cuts down on your time to market because there's going to be less inherent risk with a business that already exists and has paying customers. But the downside of something like this is that it does tend to be expensive. And the growth of that business can be something of a gamble because you don't have a good handle on what those customers want or what they ask for. You didn't develop the product with them, so you don't have a history of what those conversations looked like. You're essentially starting a lot of that marketing from scratch. So similar to the previous one where you're taking an existing product and moving it to a different market, if you're purchasing an existing product, hopefully it has some level of overlap with the existing customer base that you have or the existing marketing email list that you have, but that's not always going to be the case. And sometimes when you're buying products, you have to take what you can get. It's something of a lottery when you're trying to identify a product that's out there that's available and on the sales block, or even if you're making unsolicited offers to people who have a product out there which seems to be neglected. You can make those offers. They may or may not take them, but obviously that's something of a lottery when you're trying to find a product that is going to overlap with your existing audience. Sometimes you don't have a choice and you end up going into a completely different audience regardless of what it is that you're actually looking for.
Yeah, and this has historically tended to have been my approach. I've acquired a lot of products, a lot more than I've built and launched from scratch. And I like the model because, as you said, it does cut down that time to market. It reduces risk, assuming that you do have an audience that was already interested in it and you do have some type of product market fit. But these days, it is getting more competitive the more folks learn about the opportunity to buy. And so I still think it's a viable option, especially if you're in the position where you do have, you know, a little more cash than you have time. And a lot of our consulting friends or folks who are doing well in their careers are in exactly that position. And so if I were where I am today, you know, as someone who's 41 years old and I was doing high-end consulting and I didn't have time to build a product, I still would buy one. I mean, that would still be my approach for kind of upping the stair step given this situation.
And the last option for moving into a different audience is to create a completely new product from scratch. Obviously, the pros of something like this is that you start with a completely clean slate. You don't have any previous baggage. There's no previous customer support problems you have to deal with. But obviously, the downside is that because it's all greenfield, you're building a new product from scratch, and it's going to take longer than you think it will. You're not only just building the product itself, but you're building an entirely new business from scratch. So there's probably a lot of things that you're going to have to learn, not just about the customers, but about the space itself, the competitors, all the stuff that goes with it. It's not just the technology stack and all of the code and the product itself. It's all of the customer development as well, which you're going to have to learn that stuff anyway, regardless of which of the previous options you chose. But with creating a new product, it's going to be compounded by all the technical stuff that you have to worry about as well.
And this comes back to what I said earlier about how you really don't want to do this too many times in your career. When you're first starting out, you tend to have to sell a new product to a new audience because you don't really have, you know, a unique or unfair advantage that you can utilize. But if you can help it, try not to build a brand new product in a new niche where you don't already have some reach into it, because that is when it takes literally years to get that snowball pushing up the hill.
So now that we've talked a little bit about some of the different ways to get into a different audience, let's talk about how to leverage the existing strengths that you have. And the first one is that some of your existing business processes that you're already using for your other products can generally be duplicated. And these types of processes include how you handle your support, some of the software development mechanisms and processes that you have in place, many of the marketing processes that you have in place. So if you're doing something like Marketing Monday and you have a checklist of things that you go through on a weekly basis, a lot of those things can be reused and just copy pasted and then tweaked. So it really helps you to move things forward much faster than if you were to try and create those things from scratch, because creating them from scratch is going to be extremely time consuming. And a lot of times you don't need to. You can already take the things that you know and you've used before and tweaked, and I wouldn't say perfected, but it would spend a lot of time and effort making better for your existing products and then translate them over onto the new product, or, you know, in the new audience, and just tweak the things that need to be tweaked. You don't need to start from scratch for a lot of those things.
Another way to leverage your existing strengths, your existing knowledge, is that a lot of tools, especially marketing tools, they tend to overlap from one business to the next. So an example is, if you're using Drip to send email and you already know how to use it, then when you move into this new audience, you can use it. If you're already pretty good at running AdWords and making those profitable, using Facebook ads, using Twitter ads, that's something that you can absolutely leverage, because those can be audience agnostic. Now, you got to make sure you have the reach into that audience on that platform, but that's definitely something you can use. And tools, you know, like Kissmetrics and Mixpanel and Intercom and all that stuff. It's like, why would you reinvent the wheel? You already have knowledge of them. You know how to use them, and you know that they work for you. So just moving those into that new space would be worthwhile.
The next way to leverage your existing strengths is to remember that your network today is bigger than it has ever been in the past. You know people today that you didn't know when you started, and you should not hesitate to ask those people for help. Now, whether those people that you're asking for help are people that are colleagues or existing customers or prospects that you have on your mailing list, you can ask those people questions. You can use those lists to help generate questions and help identify additional opportunities that may be in either related or unrelated spaces. So if you're looking to move into a completely different market, that doesn't mean that the people who are currently on your list don't have those types of problems. So let's say that you're serving web designers, again, as an example. Well, web designers may overlap in some way with software developers. There are people who have both sets of skills. So if there's a subset of your existing customers or people who are on your list who may have a problem that you're trying to target, definitely go talk to those people and try and engage with them to ask them questions about what it is that they need and whether or not they're currently paying for specific services. Are they happy with them? What other products they use? Use those as customer development opportunities, because you've already have the list. You've done the hard part of getting those people onto your list. Make sure that you're leveraging that.
Odds are pretty good as well that you have practice being, you know, a manager and delegating, probably outsourcing. As we know, you know, if you're going to be leveling up, that you need to take on more responsibility, and the ideas are probably going to be larger, perhaps more competitive, perhaps more complex. And the better you've gotten at outsourcing, delegating, and essentially being good as a manager, like having skills and being productive at that, that's totally something that you'll carry with you from niche to niche, even if you decide to move.
And that actually lends itself to using your existing base of contractors or outside help that you've leveraged for assistance on your existing products. If you hired somebody to do some SEO as a contractor, if they worked out, definitely go back to them and use them for the new product that you're trying to leverage into the new audience. I mean, there's nothing that says that you can't use those same resources for a new product that you used and have worked out for you in the past. That said, if they did not work out or if things weren't going well, you could also use it as an opportunity to find somebody else for a completely new market without necessarily hurting people's feelings as well, if you have personal relationships that you don't want to burn.
Another way to leverage existing strengths I touched on earlier, but it's essentially utilizing your marketing skills. If you have SEO skills, PPC skills, content marketing, email marketing, if you're a speaker, you know direct sales, et cetera, they all lend themselves to certain types of businesses. And I think something to keep in mind here is not to pick that next niche or the next business just because it's interesting. Pick it because your existing competence in these marketing spaces gives you an advantage, right? So you can actually be deliberate about choosing that next idea or that next market based on skills that you've already developed and whether or not they're going to work in that new market.
Something else you can do there is to use that experience to actively avoid any businesses or markets or audiences where the learning curve for it seems exceptionally steep. You're already starting over with a new audience. You don't want to make it harder on yourself solely for the prospect of making it harder on yourself. There's no good reason to do that if you don't have to. So if there are places where your experience or the relationships that you have are going to give you the ins into that particular market or that audience, make sure to use those and avoid the places where it's going to cause problems for you.
Another tip to keep in mind is to take a long-term view. This is obviously going to take a long time, and anytime you switch, whether you're launching a new product or whether you're switching markets, it's going to take a long time. And if you're doing both, it's going to compound and it's going to be even longer than you want it to be. So take a long-term view and make sure it's a direction that you're going to enjoy. And it's not something you're just trying to get to do to get out of your current situation, like we talked about earlier. If it's just a grass is greener mentality, then you are signing yourself up for a lot of work. This is not something you're going to be able to just pivot into in a month or two. And this is months and months, if not, you know, multiple years, depending on how complex the idea is and the market you're trying to penetrate and how much of an audience you actually do have in that new market. So think about it long term and don't just think, oh, I can turn this thing around in 90 days, have this new product, and it's all going to be great.
And I think the last strength that you can leverage when trying to move into a different audience is to leverage your experience with the existing products and do not forget the basics of what got you to where you are today. There's all these things that when you're looking at a new market, it's very easy to forget where you came from or the things that you learned very early on or just kind of gloss over certain details of how to do the basics of SEO and how to optimize different parts of the sales funnel or your email marketing funnel or anything like that. Don't ever forget that those things are the pieces that got you to where you are today, and those are generally transferable from one product to the next just because the process of developing a product tends to be the same. The markets are different. The actual context of the marketing and copywriting and all that stuff is different when you get into the details, but generally speaking, the process tends to be very, very similar.
Well, that wraps us up for today. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.